Welcome to the Chasing Freedom Show. I'm Noah Evans, and on this show, I'm going to creatively break down real estate deals with top investors across the country to help you become closer to achieving financial freedom. Alrighty, let's get to it. Show update. Okay, guys, big update. Jeff is actually going to be leaving the show, and I'm super excited on the reason why. So Jeff is going to be focusing on being a more present dad, watching his adorable little kids grow up, and I'm super excited that he has the ability to make that choice and to go chase that lifestyle freedom. That's why we have this show. It's called Chasing Freedom, right? So that's Jeff's goal and idea of Chasing Freedom, is to be able to watch his kids, and I'm very excited for him to be able to do that. That being said, I will continue to run this show. There will still be weekly episodes dropped. And you guys, the lineup for next month's guests is pretty incredible. So definitely stay tuned. And without further ado, let's jump into this week's episode. Alrighty, guys, welcome back to the Chasing Freedom Show. Today, I have Tangi Cousins with Clerk Data. And guys, I'm very, very excited for this guest. She's going to teach you a ton about some of the hottest lead sources across the country. She does this for thousands of investors, and so she's got the actual data on what performs and what doesn't. Today, we're going to be going into a handful of these lead sources. We may even touch on some direct mail campaigns and what's working there and what's not working. And guys, there's going to be something really cool that comes from this episode. Tangi's given me a referral code to give out to you guys so you can go use her services and get these lead sources at 20 to 30% off. I'm going to release the code at the end of the show, so make sure you stay tuned for that. But without further ado, Tangi, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot, Noah, for having me on today. And I thank Chasing Freedom. We actually have three different shells that we have. We have Foreclosures Daily, which is, we are known nationwide for foreclosuresdaily.com. And then we have probatesdaily.com. And then, of course, there's Clerk Data. So thanks for having me on today. I just wanted to clarify that. So, because everybody typically knows this is Foreclosures Daily, yeah, and has for almost 20 years now.
Right. Yeah, that's the really popular one that most people will have heard of. So thanks for clarifying that, too. Well, cool. Well, I want to jump into what was your motivation for getting into this industry? Like, how did this happen?
So, you know, it's funny because I used to be a stay at home mom, and you know, it's funny because I'm still at home, you know, right? And that was the big kicker of starting this, is I answered an ad in a paper, and it was talking about real estate, and I've always wanted to be involved in real estate, but I was very ignorant to the process, and I didn't really understand it. So I was like, you know, and it was like this ad running saying that, you know, you go to the courthouse, you attend the auctions, and you pass out flyers, and you do this. So I checked it out. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. I actually took my 3-year-old son with me, and I've just been doing it ever since. And here we are almost 20 years later, still doing foreclosures, probates, you know, inheritance, co-violation, eviction, divorce. We do all kinds of different things. But, you know, the motivation was real estate, working at home, financial freedom. And that's why I love your podcast name, Chasing Freedom, because mm-hmm. isn't that what we're all doing in the end?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the motivation was Chasing Freedom. Real estate just always intrigued me, you know?
Yeah.
So I know I'm at a different level. I'm not actually buying the homes, but I'm providing the data. I'm providing the power behind the wheel. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. Which we should talk about, because you have a lot of the trade secrets of how to go find those homes. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that later. But so that's really cool. So you got into this because you wanted the time freedom to be able to stay home and be a present mother to your son, which has, I mean, if we're talking about like an impact quadrant, that's super high on like the impact quadrant area. So it's like, I love that you went after that. You just found a way, because so many people make excuses. They say, well, that's ideal, but it's not realistic. And the minute you say that and you put that out there, it becomes unrealistic because you just shut off the possibilities to it. So I love that you went after it. Cool. Well, so what I'd like to dig into is, you've got a lot of knowledge, and I mean, we've spent almost hours on the phone now talking about different lead sources and what we were going to pull and how we were going to go after leads with you. So why don't we talk about what you think some of the hottest lead sources for 2022 are going to be?
Okay, so we have so many different lead types, right? And it's hard to narrow it down to what's great and what's not. And I can sit here and name all 25, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to talk about the top 6 that we've narrowed it down to. You see, we deal with investors every day, and we have such an impact on people's lives because of the knowledge that we do have. But what we learn from is, we learn from the investors. We learn from people like you, you know, like mm-hmm. the investors that come to us to get leads, we've just tracked everything that happens and how they're, what's working, what's not working. And it's just made us totally second to none because we have the power, like I said, to behind that wheel to help drive this vehicle forward for you. And the best leads here are things like probates, you know, pre-probates, inheritance, code violation, eviction, and divorce. Those are the top six. Mm-hmm. But honestly though, Noah, probate and pre-probate by far are some of the best leads you'll ever get. They have a ton of equity. They typically don't mind taking a discount and they're extremely motivated. You know, people are much older when they lose their parents. So they usually don't want the property. They usually want to sell the property. And because they didn't buy that property, they have no skin in the game, right? So they typically don't mind taking a really big discount for the property either. You know, you're dealing with not children. You're typically not dealing with a child when they lose their parents. Right. You're typically dealing with an older adult. Who's usually established, or we hope these days, you never know. Some of them are still living with their parents these days. But
yeah, they're in the home. And it seems like, just from my experience of dealing with the probate leads since you and I started, a lot of them just want convenience, right? Like they don't want to move everything out of the house. They don't want to list it. They don't want to deal with walkthroughs or talking to an agent or trying to figure out an RE25 property disclosure form or whatever. They just want someone to say, hey, I'll pay you this amount. And I'll close on this date. Does that work? And a lot of times, as long as you're in agreement on price and they can, you know, they can meet their needs and goals with that price, like they're ready to go. They're easy leads.
You're right. You're absolutely right. A lot of people are like, oh, probates are just so great. And you know, they are, but the thing is the owner is not in this great situation, right? Most of us, you know, most people live week to week. Most people can't afford two mortgages. You know, not everybody's an investor and making in $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 deals every day, right? So we're looking at the average person who makes $500, $600, $700 a week, who's just barely scraping by. And now they've inherited this house, not just the house. They've inherited the house full of stuff, old horse and buggy wallpaper on the walls, all these rehab stuff that they have to do. And they have to have six yard sales and have Salvation Army furniture pickups. And they're looking at this house going, oh my God, like, it's going to be 6 months before I can even think about selling this.
Yeah.
You know? And then they get your information and be like, hey, you know, I can help you with this. You know, I can close fast cash, you know, as is, less than 30 days. Hey, you can even leave the unwanted items in your house. You don't need to clean, update, rehab, repair the property. I can buy now. Those are things that they want to hear.
Absolutely.
So you touched, we were going to talk about that later during the marketing, but I went ahead and touched on it now because you brought that up for me. Absolutely right. You be a one-stop shop for them. You know, hey, you don't have to do anything. They didn't know that. And they didn't know they could sell this house now. You know, a lot of people have such a misconception of probate and pre-probate. They think you have to go through the whole process before you can buy the property. And that's just not true.
No.
You know, most states you can buy almost right away. Like Florida, you can buy the property almost right away. And even if I love your little mascot. He's so cute.
This is my version of Chasing Freedom. Getting to spend time with her.
Oh, so. even if the judge has like full authority or partial authority, all they have to do is bring an offer to the judge. And they typically want to know, hey, what are you selling the house for? $80,000. Well, what is the value of the house? $120,000. Well, why are you selling it for $40,000 less? Because it needs a new kitchen. He just signs right off. I mean, it's not this big, huge, long process before they can take ownership of the house like people think that it is, you know? So
yeah.
I wanted to clear that up too, because people have such a misconception. They think of, oh my God, probate. I don't know what to do. I'm not sure how. I don't know how to handle this. I don't know the process. Well, you know, it's a good thing, because if you knew the process, then that would have meant you went through it, and we don't want you to go through that.
Yeah,
that would
have
meant you had a parent die. So, I mean, people are so wrapped up today in knowing the process of the lead that they work, such as divorce or probate. And what I teach people is, the only thing you need to know the process of is buying a property.
Right.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what the homeowner is going through. And I don't mean to sound insensitive, but I don't mean it like that. Like if they're going through divorce, foreclosure, probate, their situation should not even be in your head. What's in your head is it's a person who has a property they may want to sell. If it was my neighbor, would I go out and get $10,000 of training on how to go through the divorce process before I walk outside and say, hey, Michelle, did you want to sell your property?
Uh-huh.
No, I would just walk outside. But for some reason, people are so scared to market to somebody or talk to somebody on the phone across town that somebody else's human being neighbor, you know? So, I mean, it's like, it's all in people's head, you know, So that's kind of what, you know, we deal with when we talk about probate, pre-probate, divorce, co-violation, eviction, stuff like that, is people are scared.
Yeah,
you don't steal money, don't make money.
No, it doesn't. You know, no, it doesn't.
You got to go after it.
Let's start at the beginning with probate and pre-probate. Let's break that down. What even is that? What's pre-probate and what's probate?
A pre-probate basically means that they died last week. We verified there's real estate attached or a death certificate's been filed, and we give the lead to you 1 week later. So we always try to pull death certificates, but there are times when we have to use obituaries and stuff like that. I know it sounds morbid, right? But at the end of the day, somebody's going to buy that property and you're actually helping them not lose their home in foreclosure that their parents worked all their lives to give their children. So, I mean, it's really a sad process because a lot of people really do lose their home in foreclosure. But a pre-probate is 1 week after the death. We verify there's real estate attached, and then we give the lead to you 1 week later. That's a pre-probate. The benefit of using a pre-probate is not only are you first at the door, but if they do inherit the property via a trust, you could buy now, no lines, no waiting, right?
Yep.
And then there's probate. That's a legal process. Even if they have a will, let's make that clear, they still have to go through probate because they have to get that will administered. That's the whole point in the probate process. The only time they don't have to go through probate is if they've inherited the property via a trust, or like I did a Lady Bird deed for my children just a couple of weeks ago through a local attorney here. And the Lady Bird deed is where basically when I die, my kids are already on the deed. They just go deeds right to their name. So, and people think it's all this crazy money, and it literally cost me like $50 or $60 because I had an attorney that did the paperwork for me as a friend. And then I just filed it with the city myself.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So that's called, what is that deed called?
It's called a Lady Bird deed. It's where your kids go on the deed. It doesn't affect their first time home buyer's credit. It doesn't really show like now. It does show, but it doesn't show. It really doesn't show till like when you die, your kids just are deeded on there. It's already theirs, you know?
So then they don't have to go through the probate process.
Yeah.
What does the probate process look like? Like, what does that actually entail? What happens?
So, first let me do that. So the probate is once the probate is filed, we verify there's real estate attached. We give the lead to you 1 week later. Now, I don't know the whole ins and outs of all the legalities of the whole entire probate process. I know there's ads that have to be ran in the paper for the creditors and stuff like that. And there's letters of testaments and stuff. There's all kinds of things that have to be done through the whole entire process. I'm not going to get into the whole process because I'm not an attorney, but I know that the process takes about 2 to 4 months to go through an actual full probate. Mm-hmm. But like I said, most of the times you can buy just like right away, you know?
Yeah,
so that's the difference between a probate and a pre-probate. Now, the benefit of using a probate is if they do have to go through probate, well, at least they've already filed and they may be closer to making a decision. And then a lot of people say, well, if I work probate, would I need to work pre-probate or vice versa? And I teach people, you know, you want to strike the iron while it's hot. Just because you work it during the pre-probate process doesn't mean that it's going to go in the probate process. So there's leads that will be missed on the probate side or the pre-probate side if you don't work both lists. You know, for example, when they die, if they don't have to go through probate, you would never see that list on your probate list.
Right.
So you'd be missing those if you just use probate. And then if you just use pre-probate, you're missing that hot point of when they do file probate because you don't know when that is. It could be 8 months down the road and chances are you're not marketing to them anymore. So now you're missing that strike point where striking the iron while it's hot, you know, so. You know, and we also have inherited lists. So like, why would one want to use an inherited when they already have the pre-probate, which includes inherited, right? But the inherited list is another different too. Like somebody could inherit the property via a trust before the parents pass. Somebody could inherit the property via trust after the parents pass, you know, like, and then even then, not all of them will be on the pre-probate list because the inherited list also includes family deed transfers.
Oh, interesting.
You know, a property that will be transferred from one family member to the other in the amount of $0. We also include that in the inheritance list. But going from best to least best, which they're all three really good, I would do probate, pre-probate, and then inheritance, you know, as the top ones when it comes to death and probates and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. And then do you know some of the, I mean, it's hard to say because metrics are so different between different states, different people with different follow-up systems, how good are their follow-up systems, but generally, how many probate leads would you say you need to close a deal?
We don't really have percentages and stuff when it comes to that because probates are unlike any other list. you know, volume by numbers is what people's taught. You know, you want to work a massive amount of leads to get such and such results. And that does not come into play when it comes to these leads. You're not going to get more than 20 to 25 probate leads a week. Mm-hmm. And you'll be lucky if your county has that. You know, like where I am, I'm in Polk County. So they might have 15 to 18 probate leads a week, where if you step over 30 minutes, you're in Hillsborough and they're going to max out every week at 25. When I know it sounds like such a small amount, but when you work these types of leads, it's going to be a small group of people, but you're going to yield massive returns because you're, you know, responses and stuff like that. I meant to say you're going to yield massive response rates because you're marketing to people typically want to sell their property versus people who don't, such as, it's funny because our name is Foreclosures Daily, right? And I'm certainly not down in foreclosures, but if you called me today and you were from Kansas and you said, hey, I want foreclosures, I'm going to talk to you all day long about probate and pre-probate and why you should use them instead. You know, don't get me wrong, foreclosures, you can still find a needle in the haystack. But every beginning investor out there is told to go after foreclosures, right? So you have tons of people going after the same list, and they're getting hundreds and hundreds of marketing pieces a day. People in foreclosures, they're upside down. They're all upset. Nobody wants to sell their property. They have no equity and they're being forced out of their homes. What worse situation could you be in?
Right. Absolutely.
You know, yeah. And I would recommend pointing toward, and there's thousands of them. So, right. So I would much rather work 20 to 25 leads a week and target people who typically are geared towards people who want to sell their property versus people who don't, because my response rates are going to be way better.
Absolutely.
You know, yep. Because I'm setting myself up for success.
Yeah.
So you don't have to work as many leads to get the success that you want with these types. That means less marketing, as far as not less amount of time, less amount of money. You don't have to market to thousands of people. You only have to market to 20, 25 a week. That's less cold calling, less mailing, less skip tracing, less ringless voicemail if it's legal in your state, less SMS. Everything's smaller all the way around, but you're getting better results. So I would target these leads over those massive lists any day, just so you know. I mean, I've been with the company almost 20 years. And if I left this company today, I wouldn't go after the bigger list. Yeah. I would purposely go after the smaller ones.
Well, so one of my buddies, Elliot Smith, refers to that as, he calls it sniper marketing. Sniper marketing, you're generally going deeper, right? And you're narrowing down a niche all the way down to just what you talked about. It's usually less than 100 leads per list. Versus a shotgun list is like you're buying every single house that someone's owned for a minimum of 10 years with at least 50% equity. Okay, so in an average county, you might be pulling 50,000 leads. But at that rate, you've got two options on that list. And that's really it. You can cold call it or you can text it, and that's it, because those are the
most, who wants to mail 50,000 mail pieces?
You're not going to do it. Yeah, that's like, that could be five to $10,000 just to get one mailing campaign out.
No, I do sell those on massive, but those who have probate, pre-probate, inheritance, code violation, eviction, and divorce. And every 6 months, they'll call me up and say, hey, give me 50,000 of these. Give me 50,000 of these.
Yep.
But that's not their end all be all. And that's not their go-to list.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people too, you know, they're like, well, how long do I market to this one, you know, versus that one and this one? And here's what I teach people. You know, you got to look at the process of the lead that you're marketing to. So many people have throw out mailing these days because they're lazy, they're complacent, they don't want to spend the money, time, effort. You know, if you don't have the money, that's one thing. But when you just say, oh, I'm just going to cold call, when you have the marketing dollars to not limit your ability of reaching your seller, you're only hurting yourself by doing so. With probate and pre-probate, they're going through a process. It's our divorce. You just look at the list you're working. Is it going through a process? You know, what is the process of a typical average probate? Not that you have to wait, but you still want to market to them during that 4 or 6 months. If it takes 2 to 4 to 6 months to go through probate, just because you can buy some right away doesn't mean they're all going to sell right away.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So you want to do like a 6 to 7 step mailing campaign to a probate because they're going through a process, right? The same thing with divorce. You want to go through like a year-long process with them, mail 6 or 7 times over the next course of a year, because they're going through a process as well. So you just look at your list and say, well, are they going through a process? Like an absentee owner, you might not want to mail to them every 2 weeks for the next 6 months.
No, they're not. Yeah.
You're really going to upset people. Like my dad, he's the snowbird in Florida. So he would be considered an absentee owner because he has a property that's not his homesteaded property and he doesn't live there all year long. So, I mean, I couldn't imagine if he was getting mail drops every other day for, he's facing no distress possibly, you know, absentee owner. I tell people, we'll mail them now, mail them in 6 months and maybe mail them next year.
Mm-hmm.
They might not be ready now, but listen, mom gets sick, they can't travel back and forth anymore, guess what? They're going to go back home to PA and die with their children.
Yep, exactly.
They're not going to stay here in Florida.
No, yeah. Hey, so I got to go back because I can just hear my listeners saying, but I can't send out 25 mailers at a time, right? And that's true. There, in most mailing companies, there's a minimum mailing campaign you have to send out. What solution do you have for that?
Okay, so as a teacher, and I don't sell my training, it's free for using our list. So you get a toolbox full of bonuses, and we'll talk about that later on probably. But I give you access when you buy the leads to a mailhouse company, and the mailhouse company has their minimum down to 50 for my people.
It's cool. It's awesome. So every 2 weeks, so like, you can send, or every 2 to 3 weeks, you can essentially send out a campaign.
Yeah. So what happens, like when you buy the list, if it's a county that I already have running, I might, you know, be inclined to hook you up with some back data to kind of help kickstart your mailing,
mm-hmm.
you know? Yep. So, I mean, once you get through those first couple of weeks, you'll have no problem getting 50 a week,
yep.
you know, or you can use 2 or 3 counties too, to help increase the counts. There's all kinds of things that we can do for you to help you. But this mailhouse company, they literally are only charging like 38 to 42 cents. With postage to send postcards for the people. If you want to do more of a personal touch and do like a handwritten letter, they have a machine that does like a handwritten font, and they only charge 64 cents with postage. So I got them to discount their prices by like 60% for the people that I refer over to them.
It's not bad. It's not bad at all. So, I mean, for reference, I have like the enterprise account with Deal Machine, which is like, it's unfortunately the most expensive account. It's not a brag. It's unfortunate that I have to pay for that. But therefore, because I pay for the enterprise account, I get the cheapest possible mailer. I get the best price on it. And I still pay, I think it's like 42 cents a mailer. So 42 cents a postcard. So every one of my leads, every time I put a new lead in, Deal Machine.
Well, they have the one with the picture of the house on there too. That's like a dollar, right?
Yep. Yep.
Or I don't know what the price is, but I heard it may have been close to that. And then at one point in time, I heard that it was cheaper. But I got this company to do it for 42 cents, same kind of postcard with a picture of the house.
Yeah, that's cool.
Like, hey, you know what I recommend is just shooting out a picture of their house. Like, hey, is this your house? Are you selling this?
Uh-huh.
And they're like, hey, yes, it is. You know, people are getting like the national average response rates, 0.5% to 1.5%. But you know, I've got people getting 3, 5, 10, and 15% response rates with these types of postcards with a picture of the house. And also they say that the company that I recommend for mailing says that when you get to like the 7-step mailing campaign, you get like an 80% response rate. It increases your response rates by 80%. Wow. They say. That's it's ridiculous. Crazy. Yeah. Because nobody's mailing them anymore after 6 or 7 months, you know?
I mean, I'm even guilty. I'll be honest. I think most of my mailing campaigns stop at 3 or 4. I go 4 on my sniper list and 3 on my shotgun list. But I mean, even after hearing that, I want to go change that up. I want to go.
Well, even the marketing that I offer a 6-step mailing campaign that tells them how often to mail, the spacing in between, and how many times to mail. And even in my campaign, I have down there, if your marketing budget doesn't allow you, because some people honestly just don't have the money.
No, especially if you're starting off.
So I have the steps, and it says, hey, if you can only do 3 mailings, what you want to do is spread it out over 4 months. So you mail like October, November, you skip December, mail January. That way you're spreading your three mailing campaign out into 4 months. You know, if you can only mail 4 times and you want to mail 3 months in a row, maybe skip a month, mail, skip a month and mail. That way you're stretching it out into 6 months still, you see?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I like that. So, okay, one of the other lists you mentioned that I want to go deeper on is the code violation list. This is a pretty hot topic as far as like wholesaling and buying flips off market and all that stuff, direct to seller marketing, all this stuff. But what is that? How does that get pulled? Where does this data come from?
So we pull it right from the county, and a lot of people want to know the reasons of why they're being violated. And the top best reasons on your list to get, and this is like the cherry on the top, right? You really want code violations that have like the grown up grass, overgrown trash and debris, because that shows the property's not being maintained and nobody's handling anything at the property. And usually they'll want to be more motivated to sell their property if their grass is up to your waist. You know, there's trash blowing everywhere and just nobody's taking care of that property. Those are the big, big, best ones. There are some times where you'll get violated or not permit and just good by is like, you know, something's too long or wide, it needs to be shortened, or they built their porch with a roof and the roof's too high. So some of those stupid reasons will be on there, but we always try to pull like grown up brash, overgrown trash and debris, because the motivation is there for the people to want to sell, because that means the property's not being maintained. Those code violations are also given out up to 25 leads a week for the subscribers, where they can log onto our interface and export all the leads onto an XLS or a CSV spreadsheet, just like the probate and pre-probate, divorce, evictions, and all that. Mm-hmm. So code violations are really good.
Okay. And then I think one of the other ones you had mentioned, we went over inheritance, went over pre-probate and probate, and then that's code violations. The other
eviction.
One, yeah, evictions. So how does evictions get pulled? County data?
Evictions are really good. So we recommend using evictions for more like a tired landlord list, especially right now in today's time, because, you know, we had that moratorium and everybody was locked and they couldn't really do much for the people who are paying. You know, there's an exception of that too. If you read the law, evictions were still going on the whole time, just so you know. The only evictions that were not allowed is for non-payment. But even then, the homeowner had to prove hardship due to COVID to even qualify for that. So this time where everybody stopped messing with evictions and let that list be awesome, you know, then they lift the moratorium and everybody's like, oh my God, there's probably gonna be tons of evictions. Guys, they never really stopped at the level that you think that they did. They did for some people, don't get me wrong. And some people were really hurting when they could prove hardship due to COVID, because then that landlord might not have been paid for a year and a half and he was sitting there and there's nothing you could do. So as a landlord, you know, you're frustrated. You've got 15 properties locked in because of COVID. There's nothing you can do. You can't make people pay rent and you're sitting there dying with all of this debt in the meantime. So when they lifted the moratorium, eviction became a really hot subject and it still is hot. You know, they're trickling through here and there and evictions are really good. You know, it's more like a tired landlord list. You're going to get the name of the name of the landlord in the property address and mailing address of the landlord.
Yeah.
That way you can target them and say, hey, you know, are you interested in selling some properties you have in the local areas and blah, 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 you know, just your basic generic mailing.
Right. So but ultimately what you end up doing is you're targeting them during a time of frustration when they might be ready to get rid of that property because they just got burned. The property's, in my opinion, the property is 90% of the time trashed, right? Because the tenants are like, you're evicting me.
They don't care.
They're mad at you. They think it's your fault. I mean, typically those people in those situations, they have a certain thought process and victim mentality. And that's just that it's a never ending cycle or everything is somebody else's fault. So they usually trash those apartments on the way out. Now this landlord's got an option. Fix the trashed apartment and go through with placing another tenant, which obviously there's some things are out of your control, but most of these are mom and pop landlords as well. So they usually don't have the best vetting process for tenants, so they're likely to end up in the same situation again. Or they sell, they cash out, and they're done. And they don't even have to worry about fixing up the property.
And you'll get portfolios right now, too, because when you reach out to the landlord, the tired landlord, if you will, and they want to liquidate, they usually have multiple properties and they're just done. A lot of people are just done. They're like, you know, I'm never going through this again.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a lot of them will sell more than one. They might, you know, if they have 15 properties, they might sell 10 of them and just keep a few, you know.
There's a high level of impact to be had there as an investor as far as the return on your time. You know, you might call a landlord, like you're saying, he says, in fact, I did this in the middle of Indiana, which I wouldn't recommend just going to the middle of a state. It's super vast and empty. But anyways, I bought four properties in one portfolio package and it was really cool because it took the same amount of time it takes to close one, but I closed four. And it was the same thing. He just didn't want to be a landlord anymore. So I ended up getting a pretty good deal on all the homes and I inherited his tenants and we were off to the races on the same closing time as one house.
Well, that's good.
Yep. So, okay. Well,
we also have divorce, you know, I wanted to touch on that too, because divorces are really good. You know, it's in a lot of times people will have such a misconception of divorce, you know, they're like, well, which, you know, a lot of times these people are still living in the same household. You know, this is when they just filed for divorce. So they could still be living in the house. You know, I actually had a client use our divorce leads and, he loved them. He uses every lead we get. So when we get a new lead, he's like, I want to be the first one, you know? So he's always trying to use them. It's kind of a funny story. He started using our divorce leads, you know, and I called him up a few months later. I'm like, hey, Joe, how's the divorce leads going? He's like, oh, they're going great. I got a couple guys after me. You know, I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, well, what do you mean? He's like, I don't know. Some guy's texting me and telling me I'm trying to mess with his wife or something. I'm just trying to market to her, buy the house. I'm like, let me ask you a question. I said, well, who did you put on the envelope? He's like, I addressed it to the ladies. I'm like, well, why did you do that? He's like, well, I figured they were going to get everything.
He's become a hit target. Yeah.
Apparently the husbands were mad because those two particular guys still lived there. And they're like, why are you addressing this to my wife? This is my house too.
Yeah. You ready to sell? Can you imagine if he was even further targeting and he's like, tired of your POS husband? Call me.
Well, speaking of POS, I'm thinking of POF. I'm like, I could sell this list, you know?
Yeah.
To like a dating app.
Uh-huh.
Can anybody say rebound? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious. That's so funny. So
the divorce list, all kidding aside though, the divorce lists are good and you should address your envelopes to both of them if they're still have the same address in the list. But a lot of times on the list, it'll show plaintiff versus the defendant and there'll be two different addresses. But if the addresses are the same, you want to, and I always make sure I tell people, be clear to address it to both of them if it's still the same. Otherwise, if they have separate mailing addresses, then you can do it that way. But you know, you want to learn from other people's mistakes, and that's what makes us good here at Foreclosures Daily, is we've learned about all the investors' mistakes and we try to critique each person to say, hey, don't do this, do this, don't do that, do that. But divorce are really good because they literally just filed for a divorce. And the biggest fight that a husband and wife has is their property. You know, the wife always wants to stay, the husband always wants to sell, typically. These days it's kind of reversing the roles, but you know, so I mean, but that if you can come in and eliminate that process and be like, hey, I can pay cash for your house right now, you know, alleviate you guys from having any trouble, you know, whatever.
Close on your timeline, right? Yep. So
and a lot of times when you buy their house, you know, that was their marital settlement agreement, is their big fight was, hey, the house, well, now you've eliminated that problem. So their divorce will probably 2-3 months, they're done.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Now, how do you have that conversation? What do those marketing pieces look like for somebody getting a divorce? Because you're not just going to say, hey, I know you're getting a divorce, right? So what's the opening look like there?
So and any list you use, I recommend all generic marketing.
Okay.
I hate it when people say things like on the probate list or any list for that matter. You know, my wife and I are working on our residual income for our retirement, and we're interested in purchasing your probated property, you know, after they tell them my deepest condolences. So those are terrible moves, by the way. You know, you want to be simple, basic, generic with every single list. It doesn't really, people always think it needs to be tailored for each list. Well, what do I do on this one? What do I do on that one? What do I do on that one? There's several things that you can do. One, you can say, are you facing foreclosure? Are you facing for divorce? Are you facing probate? Are you just in a situation where you want to get out now? You can send advertising like that. It doesn't have to be one specific point. You know, you can even leave your belongings. You don't have to clean, pick up, rehab, repair. I can buy now. You can send out that and just send it to every single list that you have. Or you can just say, hey, I'm interested in purchasing some properties in a few select areas, and yours is one of them. Like, I've got this one guy who takes those little index cards. You can get them at Walmart, the dollar store, wherever. But he gets the blank ones where there's no lines. And he literally just handwrites, hey, I'm interested in buying your house at 1234 whatever street. Let me know if you want to sell. That's it.
Simple.
And then the next month he sends out the same thing. Hey, I sent this about a month ago. We're reaching out again to see if y'all are thinking about selling now. And then the third one, same thing. Hey, I sent this about a month ago. And then his fourth touch, he's like, hey, I'm a local investing company and blah, 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 blah. And he totally announces who he is on the fourth campaign. Because if he didn't hit him the first three times, he hits him on that fourth one being a professional, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he shoots him out as a regular homeowner, and then he hits him as an investment, a local investment company who's buying a few select properties in a few select areas.
Yeah.
He said he's getting like a 5-10% response rate from that.
On the fourth one, because it's announcing who he is?
Overall, the four touch.
I like the simplicity of those first
three. And he's handwriting it. It's like a little card. Hey, I'm interested in buying your house, you know? You know, and speaking of, you know, marketing techniques and stuff, like, I got one guy who, his mom is like in a nursing home, and he brings them their marketing, and it's like bingo night, man. They just sit there with their little pens and they have that shaky handwriting, and he has them addressing the envelopes.
But they probably love it. And he brings them pizza or, you know, dinner or whatever.
They do. He pays them. He gets them dinner. That's exactly what he does. And then I have another guy who has a school age children. He pays the kids in the area and he gives them the crayons. He does the envelopes, but he makes them draw stick people and houses and cars and dogs on the back and trees.
That's cool.
They call them the envelopes.
Yeah.
Right?
One of my very first mentors, Dave Billings, I used to put out driving, or what do they call them? Bandit signs for him. And his bandit sign was the most intelligent bandit sign I had ever seen. Pink with black lettering. So it's bright and it's different color. Everyone else does yellow or blue or whatever,
or green.
And his was pink, bright pink. And it was a picture that his daughter had drew of him and his daughter buying a house. And it, you know, it's the same thing. It's the crooked lines and the roof that's all slop-sided with the two giant windows and the one door on a square house.
That is so unique and creative and cute. That's like the guy that wanted the job at Google. They had all those people that had thousands of applicants. And he was the most unqualified applicant they had. But he sent him a shoe and said, I'm just trying to get my foot in the door. They hired him on the spot.
But that's creative. You know, it's someone who's thinking outside the box. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And these bandit signs, they did so well. I mean, as I was working for that mentor at that time. And I think, man, I only put bandit signs out twice and I closed probably three deals from that, which is insane.
Bandit signs work really good. Yeah. They do.
Yeah, they totally do. So
there's a lot of different things you can do in marketing. You know, I teach people, like, if you're going to handwrite your letter, then take the extra step to make sure it gets opened. One of the things I tell people is flip the envelope over and write the word cash involved in the back. They're never throwing that out.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great idea. Hey,
or you can just put $3 symbols and write involved.
That's not a bad idea either. Now, one of the things I've heard some people that are really good at direct mail talk about is putting some type of trinket or little interesting piece inside the mailer. Have you had any experience with any of the investors you're connected with doing something unique on their mailers, like sticking a little key in there or whatever it may be?
So that was my next thing is, and I was going to say, a lot of people, when you write the word cash involved, they're like, oh, I don't want to lie. I'm like, well, you're not lying. You're offering them a cash offer on the property. And if it really makes you feel bad, then stick a penny in there. You know, I'm like, but I have one guy that takes those little, you know, like the Japanese restaurants and stuff, they have those little worry dolls. They're like the size of your fingernail.
Uh-huh.
They weigh nothing. You can get like millions of them sent to you from Amazon for pennies on the dollar. And he takes the little dolls and he sticks them in the envelope and you can feel it in the envelope. And they're so cheap because they're just, they don't weigh nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you're
I have also people that do the squishy ball, the lumpy mail and stuff like that. And yellow letters still are proven, tested and tried too. There's a lot of things you can do on the outside of your envelope to make sure that your mail gets opened.
Yeah. That's very intelligent. I'll have to try the little doll thing. Cause that makes sense. You just go to Alibaba or Amazon, order 1,000 of them.
I like the crayon thing. Cause you know, you give your kids a little money and be like, hey, draw on these envelopes.
Yep, exactly. You know? Yeah. Yeah. And then
he only has like 20 to 25 a week, so he don't mind doing it.
That's perfect. That's super easy. Yeah. It's not a bad process to just implement, especially in the situation where on most of these lists, like you said, you're pulling 25 to 30-ish leads a week. So it's not that difficult to sit down for 30 minutes and handwrite those letters.
And it teaches your children too.
Yeah. Discipline, you know? And the process of like what it's like to
run a business. Well, you're doing so many, you can pay them per mailer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep, mm-hmm. That's cool. I really like that. Well, cool. So I want to wrap up the show here. You've given up so much information, and I'm sure that people are going to have more questions because we've only kind of scratched the surface on a lot of these mailing techniques and campaigns and stuff like that. So how can my listeners get a hold of you if they want to reach out, if they're interested in picking your brain or they want to see some of your content? I know you mentioned a marketing toolbox and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I'm going to give them a few ways. Number one, you can go to www.foreclosuresdaily.com. Sometimes it's just easier to type in clerk data, right? Because it's www.clerkdata.com.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put it, we're going to give a code. You got to put your code in there.
Yep.
We're going to give them 20 to 30% off for being on this podcast. If they see this podcast and they mention Chasing Freedom 1000 is your code. Chasing Freedom 1000. So go to clerkdata.com or foreclosuresdaily.com. Any one of them gets you to the same page. And it specifically asks, how did you hear about us? And do you have a discount code? Your code is Chasing Freedom 1000. If you put that code, you're going to get to me directly and I'll handle everything. They'll ask for your name, your email, your phone number, and how you heard about us. You can go there or you can reach out to me on my cell. Preferred that you go to the website, but my cell is 863-698-3550. You'd have to text me. I don't answer my phone calls usually because I'm always on the phone. Or you can email me, tangie@foreclosuresdaily.com. A lot of people like to leave out the E and the S, so it never gets to me.
Yep.
That's why I like to give you three ways.
You know what's funny is you're the first guest we've ever had give out their phone number. And I usually tease the guests where I'm like, okay, and I'm going to give you guys their phone number and you can reach them at any time. So that's awesome that you were willing to do that, because you'll get people to reach out to. They'll want to pick your brain on leads and stuff.
And
like
a lot
that,
of people don't know the spelling of my name either. It's Tangie. It's Angie with a T. So it's TANGIE at foreclosuresdaily.com.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for being willing to share this information. And guys, there'll be some links as well to get a hold of Tangie and go look at her her marketing channels here. And then we'll put the discount code ChasingFreedom1000 in the show notes as well, just in case you forget. But guys, thank you so much for listening to the show. Tangie, thanks for coming on and being willing to give this value away to the listeners. We really appreciate that.
Thanks. Have a great day.
See ya. Thank you.
Bye.
A quick housekeeping item that I wanted to take care of. So the show has been growing. I want to exponentially grow it. And to do that, I need your guys' support. This show is getting about 800 downloads a month, which is incredible. The average show only gets about 140. I want to get that to, 2,000, 3,000 downloads a month, because by doing that, I'll be able to bring on some really awesome guests, some huge players in the industry that you guys will gain so much from. In order to do that, though, we got to get those reviews in. If you guys don't mind heading to Apple Podcasts, telling me your honest feedback on the show, whether it's good or bad, either way, make sure it's a 5-star review. But I really would appreciate your honest feedback. Again, thank you guys for your continued support. Without further ado, let's jump into this week's episode. All right. Thanks for tuning into this week's episode, you guys. For more awesome real estate content, you can check out my Instagram. It's just NoahEvans_real estate. It'll also be in the show notes. If you want to reach out to the guest, their contact information and websites and however else to get a hold of them will also be in the show notes. All of our podcast episodes get thrown up to YouTube. And for more awesome exclusive content, please go check out the website. We'll have that link in the show notes below as well. All right. Peace.